Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Bartholomew Town is presented in part by the University of Rhode Island Online, who offer a wide array of programs. Learn more by visiting uri.edu/online. The headline, a new alliance for nonprofit impact to open its doors to serve and support Rhode Island's nonprofit sector. That's the headline that went out in a press release. I think it was last week or the week before. So it's been a couple of weeks now that this concept has been bubbling. The Alliance for Nonprofit Impact. And really, when you think about a state like ours, there's so many different moving pieces happening in every sector, whether it's in the for-profit sector, whether it's in the governmental sector, and certainly in the nonprofit sector. So sort of consolidating some of that mission under one umbrella makes a lot of sense. And it seems like it would have a great opportunity to impact as many people as possible. We're joined by Nancy Walensky and Courtney Nicolato. Good morning to both of you, and thanks so much for the time.
Thanks for having us.
Good morning, Bill. Glad to be here. Appreciate you.
Of course, likewise. So, Nancy, you are the director of the Alliance for Nonprofit Impact. I guess right out of the gate, summarize what the nonprofit, the Alliance for Nonprofit Impact is.
Great. Thanks so much. So Rhode Island's nonprofit sector is an anchor for the entire state and for all of our local communities. And it is often overlooked. We kind of take it for granted that nonprofits are going to be there when we need them. And they are. But we haven't seen really intentional support for nonprofits over the generations. And we also haven't had a unified voice for the nonprofit sector. And so the Alliance is really designed to support nonprofit staff, to strengthen nonprofit organizations, and to improve the ecosystem in which nonprofits work. And so we're really excited. We've had a tremendous response from nonprofits across the state. We were really thoughtful in the design process over the last few years, bringing together over 400 stakeholders. So nonprofit staff and nonprofit leaders, board members, community members, funders, capacity building consultants. And we really spent the time to bring them into the process to hear about what their challenges were and the opportunities for working together to address those challenges. So we're really trying to be intentional about partnership with existing resources, as well as looking for ways to fill the gaps, which I'm sure we'll talk more about, but we're really excited about it.
And Courtney, you're the president and CEO of the United Way of Rhode Island, and also now a fill-in host on WPRO. Congratulations on that. That's exciting.
Hey, I learned from watching you, my friend. Yeah. I learned from watching you.
Well, I'll leave that. I appreciate it. So I won't get into joke territory here. The United Way has been a real steward for the nonprofit sector. You know, it's interesting. The nonprofit sector in Rhode Island, really anywhere, is robust. There's a lot of different levels of nonprofits. Of course, there are the big ticket operations such as yours. There's also people, and believe me, some people will just say, let's form a nonprofit so we can try to get grant money. And maybe it's just one or two people with a board. So from your standpoint at the United Way, what's the real acute need right now to sort of super serve everybody who's in this space under one singular, I used that word umbrella before. I think it's actually almost more of a vehicle.
Yeah. You know, it's very interesting because the Rhode Island nonprofit sector makes up 16.5% of the workforce here in the state of Rhode Island. We're bigger than manufacturing, you know, 70,000 employees. Like, it's a significant impact and footprint in our state. And when you think about the for-profit sector, and specifically small business, you know, the nonprofit sector is quite comparable to that, you know, and there is a ton of great resources for business, small business, Main Street business here in the state of Rhode Island, whether it's resources through commerce, whether it's great organizations like the Rhode Island Black Business Association, there's a ton of those types of resources available. And for nonprofits, we're different. We're similar to a business. And I also, you know, I teach nonprofit management, and I often say we are a mission-driven business. However, the needs are eclectic or unique in comparison to our for-profit counterparts. And so, you know, United Way's focus is how do we build racial equity and opportunities for all Rhode Islanders? That includes 70,000 nonprofits, because we have to ensure that nonprofits are there to provide these critical supports and services that you can't find anywhere else. And so for us, it was really around how do we ensure that we have those types of small business development center-like supports for our nonprofit sector, but really catered to the needs of nonprofits particularly. And then the other reason that was so important to us is I was often very early on in my time back, we were talking before the show, talking about boomerang. I boomeranged back to Rhode Island. And when I did 5 years ago, I remember sitting in rooms with elected officials and others, and they would say, Courtney, you know, what does the nonprofit sector think about this? Or, you know, how do you feel? And I all of a sudden sat back and went, that's not my role to speak on behalf of the entire nonprofit sector. And really, though, that then sparked the, ooh, but who is? And so, you know, the part that, you know, there's lots of reasons why I'm so excited for the Alliance for Nonprofit Impact. But the fact that nonprofit organizations have a voice at the state house, in municipalities, in conversations with state agencies, et cetera, is much, much needed. And I'm excited that the Alliance will provide that type of support.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes really the ambassadorship is missing, you know, whatever sector, whatever policy goals that there are, everything's laid out on the table from a need standpoint, of course, but then also from an execution standpoint, from an organizational side, but the pipeline to connect the pieces to make all that happen is missing. Nancy, do you see yourself as sort of an ambassador? We might have to get you like a title, like a placard, ambassador to the State House or the Newport City Hall or whatever it may be.
Yeah, well, I'm passionate about the sector, so you can wind me up and send me to go, and I will go talk to anyone about the importance of the nonprofit sector. But I really think that it is crucial that nonprofits are represented in the development of policies that affect them. Just like small businesses or large corporations have lobbyists at the state house, the largest nonprofits will have a lobbyist really working on the specific issues that they are concerned about. But there hasn't been any voice looking at things like universal charitable deduction, things that apply to the entire sector. And even when the ARPA money was being debated at the state house, I went to one hearing with Senate Finance Committee about the $10 million allocation for nonprofit assistance. And I was the only person there to speak on that. Now, we have thousands of nonprofits in the state of Rhode Island. And to have one lone voice saying that $10 million is a paltry amount to be investing in what I like to call the state's service infrastructure. The state doesn't actually do direct service. The state contracts direct service out to nonprofits. So it depends on nonprofits to provide these essential services, but it doesn't invest in those nonprofits and ensure that they're sustainable. And so there is this disconnect between the state's reliance on nonprofits and its investment in them. And so if we can really mobilize the sector, so not just me being a voice of the state house, although I am very committed to doing that work, ensuring that nonprofits have a seat at the table to be able to bring the expertise that they have about the intractable problems that we face, they are the ones who are seeing it firsthand and should be relied upon in terms of informing the strategies that the state is taking. But also, how can we bring them into the development of partnership work with the state so that it is not just a vendor contractor kind of relationship, but really a co-development of strategies informed by the work on the ground?
Makes a lot of sense. I think back to just a couple of weeks ago, I had someone from an adult shared living service that is that was sharing the success stories that come with adult shared living and how it's such a great option for folks with developmental needs that outside of certainly institutional, like actual physical institutions for some of these folks, that the success that's there, yet there was a disconnect, and there may still be even a few weeks later, I'm sure, between the State House understanding that success and understanding the need for those nonprofits to be properly funded and properly staffed and so on and so forth. So it's almost like with this type of ambassador, you receive the information that, hey, there's a nonprofit sector within the nonprofit sector that needs more attention. It's a success story. So it's not always saying, hey, something's not working. We need to, we need literal cash to change that. It's, hey, this is working and it can serve a problem that maybe is being addressed legislatively that doesn't even need to go any further. It just needs to be funded.
Absolutely. And the opportunity to scale programs that are really successful may be missing if you don't have that link of hearing about the successful work that nonprofits are doing. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is one of the primary focus areas for us, is increasing the visibility of both the impact and the importance of this work. So telling the story of the great work that is done every single day. We think about it like COVID. They're the ones that you turn to when, you know, where inflation is hitting. And so people's dollars are stretched thin and they need the food bank or they need the food pantries. But those people are doing that work every single day. And they're also, I think one of the things we tend not to focus on is the amount of cost nonprofits are saving the state by the interventions they're doing every day. So every kid who's in an after-school program and getting mentorship and getting care and career development is one kid who's not going to end up in the training school or in the ACI because they've had a caring adult who cares, who is investing in them. And every person who's working in getting eviction prevention assistance, that's one person who's not going to end up being on the rolls somewhere or on the street somewhere. And I think that we haven't done a good job of telling that story about not only the importance of investing in the sector, but how much the sector is saving the state money and brightening the state's future, really, because of the ways that the successful work that is happening through nonprofits.
Really interesting perspective there. One that, frankly, I haven't really seen framed out, at least regularly. Courtney, the United Way is the steward of 401 gives. A lot of people are familiar with it. It pops up in your inbox and on Twitter and everywhere else asking for folks to donate to nonprofits. And sort of in that spirit that Nancy just mentioned, it almost serves as, I hate to say it, but it almost serves as a little bit of a reset on taxation in a way where someone who's able to donate a substantial amount or a somewhat substantial amount, it's almost like an addendum to taxation in the thought that you're funding a nonprofit. Obviously, it's generosity oriented. Obviously, there are tax benefits to doing this as well. No one's dismissing that, but you're able to take some of the burden off of the quote unquote capital T taxpayer by funding these programs, creating a robust and dynamic environment that is, in some cases, already working, or in other cases, could potentially solve some of our biggest problems, whether it's health, public health, whether it's housing, whether it's education, whatever the case may be. So speaking from the perspective of 401 gives, you know, this new level of advocacy, talk about that and how it takes the state to another level in terms of what it can accomplish.
You know, when I think about state funding and supporting nonprofits and by providing these direct services, it is not fully funding most services that are being provided. And, you know, and I can tell you from my own experience as we run a number of different state contracts here in at the United Way, is I'm paying my staff a livable wage that is not coming from my state grant, right? And so that type of thing benefits, you know, indirects, those are all being supported by nonprofit organizations. Nonprofits must diversify their revenue streams. It's a must. They have to have the generosity of donors. They have to have grants. They have to have and oftentimes state or federal funding to and blending and knitting that together to make it work, right? And so 401 gives to me is just an additional mechanism to then drive investments in the nonprofit sector. When I returned home 5 years ago, we saw that we were ranked 47th in the nation for charitable giving in Rhode Island. And that was a per capita percentage of total income. And that's about 2.1 to 2.2% of folks' total income was going towards charitable. And that included their religious affiliations, that included kids' PTAs in schools, and except that was kind of an all-up number. But we knew that there was a ton of folks giving very generously, well over that 2.2%. And then there were many who weren't giving anything. And so 401 Gives was really that conduit, is how do we lift up the nonprofit sector? How do we bring visibility to the nonprofit sector? Because they are doing some really unbelievable things in service and support to the community. You know, they are the ones that are educating our kids. They're the ones that are keeping them after school. They're the ones who are, you know, bringing the arts to life here in Rhode Island. They are the ones that are providing safety and security, you know, you name it. The nonprofit sector is doing it. And so 401 Gives was, how do we elevate that? How do we better tell that story? And how do we bring organizations together? And what I love about 401 Gives, this is our fifth year. It'll be on Monday, April 1st. What I love is that the nonprofits really tell their story in such a beautiful way on 401 Gives, around 401 Gives. I remember a few years ago, I had somebody like, I get too many emails before 401 Gives. And I'm like, I'm sorry, not sorry. So, you know, because right. I do think that this is a great opportunity for nonprofits to tell their story, but also for us to tell the story of nonprofit organizations. So we've raised $10 million collectively for many organizations, over 700 different organizations over the course of the last 5 years. We want to blow that out of the water in our fifth year and excited for what Monday, April 1st will bring. What I also love about 401 Gives is we have a lot of people that give $20, $25, maybe have never made a donation ever in their life, and this is their first one. And so it is bringing new donors to the table. Many organizations are seeing new donors as part of 401 Gives. And then we can continue to build that importance of the culture of philanthropy that is needed and necessary in our state. Because as much as we feel the burden of tax, I feel it personally. We all feel it, right? It is not fully funding everything that's necessary here in our state. And so the generosity of us as individuals and the tax benefits that come with giving of your treasures is incredibly meaningful too.
Nancy, what's oversight of nonprofits like in terms of folks sometimes, I think, wonder, you know, who holds nonprofits accountable for when you make a donation or the state provides funding? And a nonprofit doesn't necessarily deliver on its mission. Is that something kind of the reverse, if you will, of your role of advocacy and moving development opportunities forward? Are you now also sort of in a position where you got to say, hey, wait a second, you've been funded. Are you serving the state in a way that aligns with the mission that you've set out to achieve?
I actually think it's all one and the same, because we're really looking to see the impact, positive impact on the communities. And having a strong nonprofit by itself really doesn't matter if they're not doing what the community needs them to do. Mm-hmm. And so when we look at the things that we have been in discussion with the state about, they include centralizing some of that oversight so that we can really hold nonprofits to a high standard while also resourcing what they need. Because ultimately, if nonprofits aren't doing what their mission says they're going to do, it's the community that's hurt. And so we, as much as anyone, want to make sure that we are a sector that is held to the highest standards and that we are really leading the way and moving work forward. So that one of the things that this Alliance wants to do is to help to build really good practice for nonprofits, really help to strengthen financial management. And one of the issues in particularly smaller nonprofits, our priorities really, we want to provide support for all nonprofits in the state, but our priority is really organizations led by people of color because they've been historically underfunded and under-resourced, and also smaller organizations. And those organizations have limited staffing. So they have someone with a passion and an expertise in the program that they're doing and connections to the community, but they may not have the background on HR or on operations or financial management. And they want to do the right thing and mm-hmm. they want to really impact their community, but they need the training and the support to be able to do that in a way that aligns with accounting practices and fiscal controls and all those sorts of things. And so we want to be a support in that way in helping them to get connected with the resources that they need and the training that they need so that they can have exemplary management and also achieve the mission that they are doing. And one of the issues right now is that when you look at the oversight at the state level, it's parceled out by department or agency. Yeah. And there is also like the Secretary of State's office is responsible for your initial registration. And then you have to do an annual report. And people know about that. And the Secretary of State's office does a great job on their website of walking people through that. But then a lot of folks might not know they also, if they're going to do fundraising solicitation, they also need to register with Department of Business Regulation because mm-hmm. that hasn't been necessarily always evident. So I was just been in conversations with both of them about how can we have something pop up when you fill out your annual report that you need to make sure that you're registered with DBR so that people who are well-meaning and want to do the right thing and want to be in compliance know that they need to pop over the next step over to DBR. Or are there ways that we can combine that process so that it's automatic and so that you have one registration, things like that. So how can we really, just like small businesses want to work with state regulators to streamline things and make things more efficient, we want to work with the state and federal government to really address some of those regulatory, not there, the regulations need to be there, but they need to be there in a way that is thoughtful and streamlined so that we can focus on getting the work done and not jumping through hoops. Mm-hmm. But we know that oversight, thoughtful oversight, is really important.
The Alliance for Nonprofit Impact. Nancy Walensky, what a name. How are you not on radio or like a meteorologist?
That's like, great. It's a great name.
What a name. Holy yeah. Moses.
Courtney Nick, a cooler human.
I can tell.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. Great stuff. This is really exciting. Courtney Nicolato, as always, the United Way of Rhode Island. People know the United Way by brand. A lot of people in the state have gotten to know you over these last several years and the work that you're doing, and it's incredible. It's mm-hmm. underappreciated, and I hope that you both know that the people who are paying attention appreciate it, and what's exciting is more and more people are starting to pay attention on a mezzanine level to this work. And for anyone out there who's listening right now, because I know that we've got a lot of listenership within the nonprofit sector, mm-hmm. congratulations on finding a vehicle. I like that word more than umbrella, because I think that's what it is. It's a vehicle, as I understand it, for just improving everything operationally. So great work. And thank you both for your time.
They can also go to rialliance.org and they can register to become a member for free until April 1st. And they can also find out about 401 gifts there as well.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.